Support for this podcast comes from Staffing Futures. Nowadays, recruitment websites need to do more than just validate your business. Websites are your digital front door, where new clients and great talent should come knocking. Did you know that 80% of recruiters don't even measure the return on investment from their website? Your website should be embedded into your recruitment process, driving your team's productivity, business growth, and ROI. It's time to let technology do the hard work. So do you want your recruitment website to stand out from the crowd, generate new business leads and placement revenue? If that's a yes, then talk to Staffing Future, the recruitment website and technology experts. Get a free recruitment website and technology stack review, as well as a summary of where your main competitor is ranking against you in the search engines. Visit www.staffingfuture.com/rules. That's www.staffingfuture.com/rules.
What great ideas are so close within your grasp? Seeing other points of view, anticipating change, considering multiple possible turnouts, acknowledging uncertainty, searching for compromise. We're going to talk about how to get over those limiters of innovation so that you can extract better thinking from yourself and your team. So let's talk about how to win the future.
This is the Marketing Rules Podcast. Do you know the new rules of marketing? Here is your host, James Whitelock.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another Working Lunch on Wednesday. This is hump day. This is the kind of the crap day of the week. So that's why you've got me. The best beard in recruitment marketing is back. My name is James Whitelock, and I'm going to be kind of hosting today. And I'm going to be joined by Andy from JXT, who I'm going to bring up on screen in a little bit. But as usual, it would be great to hear what everybody's had for lunch. I'm going to bring Andy up and let's find out what Andy had for lunch. If you've even had any lunch yet. Hey there, Andy. How's it going?
Hey, James. To answer your question, no, I haven't had lunch yet, but I can tell you what I'm planning on having.
Go on, let's go for that. That's even better. Go on.
Well, we actually decided at the beginning of lockdown, we've got two choices. You can get fitter or you can get fatter. So we chose fitter. So I'll be sticking to my smoothies at lunch. So it's a bit of a fruit concoction
into a smoothie. That does sound very healthy. I kind of went in the other direction and actually put on weight during lockdown.
Good work.
Exactly. So, you know, anyone who knows me knows that I'm actually a bit of a gym bunny, but it hit me hard. It hit me hard with lockdown, hit my waistline. And now I'm desperately, now the gyms are open, I'm desperately trying to claw that back. But being a man of a certain age, it may well be quite difficult as I get a bit older. So we'll see.
No excuses, James.
Let's see what everyone else had. So again, if you've let us know in the chat what everybody's had for lunch. Banana and pancakes from Pippa. Wow, that sounds pretty cool. That sounds quite kind of really well thought out for a lunchtime on a Wednesday, to be honest. And Carla had some kind of leftover spag bol. Yeah, I mean that sounds pretty good as well, to be honest. I only just had a chicken wrap, which I guess is kind of healthy, right? David has tuna tomato pita. Wow, I mean, I never know where to go with tomato in sandwiches. Whether it gets all too kind of too soggy, I know I'm never sure how I feel about that. Again, welcome everybody and everybody who's joining us probably on Facebook as well. If anybody's got any questions, then either stick them in the chat or you can hit the ask a question button. So, Andy, for anybody who doesn't know you, everybody should know you, but everybody who doesn't know you, just kind of give us a little intro to you and to JXT.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, just to spark the debate, I'm firmly in the camp of tomatoes in the sandwich, certainly with a bit of tuna. So that's the first bit about me. So look, I'm Andy Wishner, regional manager at JXT. I won't bore you too much, but we're a digital recruitment platform. I've been with the company for about circa 5 years, and before that I was actually a recruitment consultant. So for rightly or wrongly, I love the industry really glad to see so many people joining us.
You're in kind of a unique camp there because you've been a recruitment consultant. A lot of us haven't ever been actually on the coalface. speaking for myself, I've been in recruitment for 15 years or so. Never spent a day billing or anything like that. So I kind of tip my hat to you that you've kind of made that move. Was it better or worse? Which side would you rather be on?
Well, remember our audience, I guess, but most certainly for me, the side that I am on now, you know, I actually love the role. I love the business that I worked for. It's just recruitment does come with its challenges, as everyone knows. Not that other jobs don't, but it was a good move for me. But I didn't want to move too far away from the industry because I really feel like we had some value here.
Were you any good as a recruitment consultant? Was that the real reason why you moved on?
Well, it's funny actually, when you just said there that you've never spent a day billing yourself, I just thought, I wonder how many days I've actually spent billing. But no, I'd say I was okay. I was average. I wasn't a top biller, but I did okay.
What was the thing that made you move? Why did you kind of make that change? Was there a kind of a real driver? Did you want another, just a different challenge, or or did you just kind of get offered a different role somewhere else?
Yeah, well, I guess a mixture of all of them. I was working for a business that only recruited salespeople. We had a number of divisions and a number of different teams, but just as a nature of the job, the amount of times that you'd go and meet with a client, and not just me, but most of the half-decent billers, you'd sort of be discovering what requirements and trying to establish personality that the client's looking for. And quite often you'd sit there thinking, well, actually, I could match this job. And being the recruiter, you've got access and visibility across the market. And being a sales recruiter and a salesperson myself, it was brilliant. So you spend your time looking at amazing opportunities, presenting these amazing opportunities to some really good talent and working with some great companies. I actually moved to go to a client. It was only a short stint before JXT. And then into JXT, it wasn't uncommon that people would move from the business to an actual client. Because we're just visible, you can see it, it's exciting. And you hear all these cool stories about tech firms and how great they are and how successful you can be. 5 years in, being fairly successful, but I can certainly say it's not as easy as some recruiters make it out when they're selling you the job. Like we said at the beginning, every job has its challenges.
Isn't it just? Well, Andy, you're on today to kind of, we're gonna chat around the moving from a candidate to a client-led market. I'm sure we'll touch on the kind of how technology can play its part in it, and I may well bring up marketing at some point because it wouldn't be me hosting if I didn't bring up something around marketing at some point. So the kind of topic for today is kind of how to manage the change from candidate to client-led market and kind of how you attract and how you become a kind of stronger business kind of post-COVID. So do you want to kind of kick us off?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess I would say, James, please jump in with your marketing piece, because I'll tell all of the audience now that I'm not a marketer. I have the benefit of having access to hundreds of JXT clients who are marketers, and actually we base a lot of our decisions as a business on what our customers and what we know the market are saying, what the challenges are and how we approach those. Over the last 2 or 3 months, certainly since lockdown has started to ease and people are seeing some more positive shoots, it's become very apparent to the majority of people that we speak to that actually there is some great talent out there. There are lots of good people that really, unfortunately, due to the circumstances, have been let go. What seems to be the challenge is finding those clients that are still looking for people, and then being able to engage with those people, more of a business to business type approach, rather than the candidate side, which is more B2C. So it's been quite obvious that change and that need for change.
Have you spotted any trends in niches that are kind of have either made this transition kind of early on, or are just kind of busy generally? You know, I mean, I suppose from our point of view, we're doing a lot of work with a lot of IT recruiters at the minute. Are you seeing any kind of trends around that with the kind of clients that you're talking to?
I would say yes. I haven't noticed anything necessarily specifically sector-wise. I mean, there are some sectors that have continued to be busy throughout, thankfully, and we've got some really positive stories from some of our customers. The IT recruiters that we're talking to, as you've referenced them, the main trend that I'm noticing is that the last month more so, but there's been less of the permanent market coming back, less of the permanent hires. Again, I guess just highlighting over the last few years, I've noticed that actual business plans of recruiters, the most successful ones seem to have a bit of both contract and perm to support one another. But yeah, as a general trend, I'd say the market's coming back, but more on the contract side across multiple industries, I would suggest.
Okay. And let's pick up back on the kind of B2C and the B2B. So not wanting to tell anyone how to kind of to suck eggs, but if you're not kind of familiar with those terms, we probably should be. But B2B is business to business and B2C is business to kind of end client. In marketing, it's something that we're always kind of concerned about. And recruitment is one of the weird industries where you kind of do both, right? You know, other businesses don't tend to have that split. And that means it's a real kind of challenge for marketeers and for marketing kind of software, marketing tools, and marketing technology, because there's subtle differences, or maybe there isn't subtle differences. I don't know. Maybe you can kind of expand on that.
I would say probably subtle differences. I mean, the messaging and the branding and things like that should be fairly consistent, I would suggest. And again, I'm not a marketer, so I'm open to be challenged. What I would say is different is probably the tools that you use, the detail that's included. You know, on a business-to-business marketing campaign, as a business, I would expect to be inundated with content about what you can do for me, what you can't do for me, and ultimately what the potential return on investment is. What I think is quite important to remember from a recruitment standpoint, because you're entirely right, most businesses, or lots of businesses rather, are one or the other, and recruiters have to do both very, very well, which is a challenge in itself, you know. Sorry, I've completely forgotten. I lost my...
That's fine. You mentioned kind of tools there. You know, I mean, you're obviously allowed to mention JXT as a kind of a tool, but what else is kind of, you know, what does kind of JXT kind of offer with regard to those kinds of tools to target the kind of B2B market? And also, what else is out there that you think is worth kind of a notable mention when it comes to kind of B2B marketing?
Yeah, good question. I mean, when I refer to tools, I'm thinking about things like your social channels, your email, your phone, video, obviously your website. What's important when using these tools is the consistency and being personal, and obviously adding that value. JXT as a platform, essentially, we make it easy for you to set it up on your website so that the journeys are clear for a candidate and a client, and obviously you can distribute different types of content. Obviously, James, your business is fantastic at actually delivering that content, and more from a strategy point of view and actually a branding and a distribution point of view. There's some fantastic video tools out there. I'm yet to see it, but Odro keep releasing new products. I know Hinterview are really, really good. Pager to distribute the content. The trouble is that all of these tools are great, and obviously JXT add value and all of these other companies add value. What I think is most important is adding that value to your customers and using those tools to add the value. So from a candidate perspective, we say that we market to our candidates. Dare I sort of say it, but I would challenge that and say, well, we don't. You know, we talk about marketing to our candidates, but what we actually do is we serve them jobs. Certainly when we place candidates or when we lose candidates to competitors and they get placed elsewhere, we might keep in touch with these people from time to time. We might send them a newsletter, but there's no relationship and there's no trust being built between placements, which as a result, very few people place candidates in a permanent capacity multiple occasions, which is quite worrying, you know, and it's something that actually recruiters is a huge opportunity to learn from. From a business to business perspective, you absolutely can't use the same approach. And what I mean by that is, if you only contact your clients when you know that they've got a job for you, well, you might win that job, but it will be lesser terms, or you'll be hammered and you'll be up against five or six other agencies. There was no trust to give you the job as an exclusive, or dare I say, even a retained vacancy that people should be looking to win where they can. It's about continuity of the message and consistency over a period of time from clients to build trust and to help them. You can do that in a variety of ways, but you know, from in a recruitment industry, you could give them market trends, you can give them employment stats, you can give them things like how-to guides on helping onboard new starters, you know, so you're making your customers look better because they'll take your information and go and sit internally and use it, and they will look better themselves. So you're building that level of trust. I mean, use JXT and me as an example. You know, I've been told outright, and thanks, James, for actually allowing me to introduce JXT and mentioned him a couple of times, but I'm not here to sell JXT, right? Hopefully some people on the call will get some value add from listening to us today and then go and use that. I would also say JXT has a lot of resource online, so there's no reason why you can't go on our website, see some of our content, and you might want to start educating your customers on technology trends within the recruitment industry and how technology is really enabling recruiters to do better and do it quicker. You can go on our site, you can take off the blog, you can put it on an email and distribute it to your clients. And just to show that I'm not selling JXT here, we've recently migrated onto HubSpot as our CRM, so I'm using all of their resources, and they've got some fantastic resources available to everyone.
I'm a massive fan of HubSpot here.
Yeah, it's amazing. There's no reason why you can't go and why I shouldn't go and redistribute some of their content, you know, to some of our customers to help you guys. Or AppsGo, I know that many people will be members of, you know, fantastic places where you can go and get this content yourself that you can then go and help your customers with. And I think that's the most important thing. That's how you'll build the trust.
Yeah, I know. I completely agree. I think that kind of trust point. And I think it's something I've kind of noticed a lot during lockdown and during this kind of period, is that the businesses that we're working with have definitely kind of been paying much more attention to the kind of added value piece. You know, if you kind of following on from, you know, kind of HubSpot's kind of flywheel kind of methodology, where you're kind of engaging, attracting and delighting, you know, there's much more kind of understanding of adding value through kind of decent bits of content, basically. And definitely, there's definitely been that shift as well, as you mentioned, towards the kind of like client focused as well, which is interesting because you mentioned that we don't really kind of concentrate on candidates. But I suppose my argument would be that actually now's a good time to try and do it, because at some point this is gonna flip. You know, these jobs will come back, or different jobs will come back. And these candidates you've got potentially could be, you know, highly skilled with masses of experience. You want to still be keeping in contact with them and keeping them warm and keeping you top of mind. So it'd be interesting to kind of just get some thoughts about, and I know we're actually talking about a client market, but looking post kind of COVID, you know, what can we do to kind of keep these candidates on board without just kind of annoying them and pissing them off if they've been made redundant, or if they've been furloughed, and without kind of rubbing that in and doing it in a much more kind of subtle and ethical kind of way.
Yeah, and you're right. You know, topic of today is moving to a client-led market, but it's absolutely vital that you have the candidates there and engaged, ready to serve the jobs that hopefully the client-led marketing wins. I guess from a candidate point of view, similar sort of message, right? We need to, and for rightly or wrongly, lots of recruiters aren't respected by their candidates. The candidates aren't necessarily loyal to them. Now, if we use a similar sort of principle to what we were thinking of from the client side and actually try and help these people, candidates, I believe, see recruiters as a necessary evil, somebody that that could get them a job, but actually I've got no loyalty to you, and really you as a recruitment consultant only see me as a placement fee and some commission. We can be clever, you know, we all have databases, we're all using technology, we've mentioned a few other tools, we can nurture our candidates, and we absolutely must be better at that. I guess an analogy that I'll liken it to is, and because I'm an ex-recruiter, I can probably use this without getting slated too much, but recruiters quite often get compared to car salesmen. So I'll use the car salesman analogy. You know, if there's a big manufacturer of cars, BMW or Mitsubishi or anybody, they would, and I'm a reseller of their cars, a buyer can come onto my car lot and buy that Mitsubishi that they want, but equally they can go and buy that Mitsubishi from five or six other resellers. They don't care who they buy it off, they just want the Mitsubishi. And it's exactly the same if you look on a recruitment side, if you flip it to recruitment. Candidates really don't care if they get the job through you or anybody else. In fact, I would go as far as to say candidates, if they want the job, will do everything they can to get that job, whether it's through you, which is why you have to think about your candidate marketing. And if you're lucky enough to have a candidate on your website on a job, make it easy for them to apply and all of that kind of good stuff. But if they can't do it through you, they'll have no qualms, whether you've placed them or not, to go and do it through your competitor. And equally, lots of candidates would have no qualms as to discovering who that company is that you're recruiting for and going to them directly. There is zero loyalty there, and it's the same. You know, I could go and buy a car from anyone. However, if I had to kind of bring it all around into a nice circle there, actually, if I had considered building relationships over the long term and building implicit trust with that car manufacturer, with Mitsubishi, to the point that when they were releasing their car, they would only give it to me as the only reseller. Well, whether that buyer is loyal to me or not, they have to buy it from me because, like I said, all they want is the car. All the candidate wants is the job. So it does bring it all around to one. You know, you build your trust and a relationship with your client. And your client then says to you after a period of time, I now have this engagement. I now have this opportunity for you to work on. And because I have implicit trust in you, I will pay your fee of X amount, which is more than your competitor. I will give you an exclusive vacancy. And then all of a sudden it brings the whole journey together. So you can't have one without the other, I guess.
I'm gonna push back a little bit. I think the candidate kind of loyalty possibly depends on the type of candidates you're searching for. If you're very near the top, or if you're doing kind of C-suite, C-level kind of candidates, if you're search and selection, then my experience would say that there's definitely more loyalty at that end. When you move kind of further down the kind of the pay scale, as it were, then I think you're right. Loyalty does tend to kind of wane at that point. And what you tend to hear from a lot of clients or from a lot of our recruitment customers is it's a kind of who can get to the candidate first.
Yeah.
It's you know, which always kind of upsets me a little bit, because you know it's recruiters just kind of trying to do what they can as fast as possible and trying to cut corners so they can get a job in front of this person and get them to sign on a dotted line, instead of kind of for me concentrating on something which is just be the best recruiter, mm-hmm. as opposed to not the quickest recruiter. Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of that's I know this is slightly kind of topic, but it's a little bit of a bugbear of mine.
That's part of the sorry for jumping in, but again, from an ex-recruiter point of view, that's part of the pitch, you know. But I have to have the trust to begin with for the customer, for the client to believe in my pitch. But you're absolutely right. This idea that recruitment is the quickest to the button, and if I sling enough at it, then someone will stick.
Yeah. You know,
that's true across quite a wide range of the market. It's the people that are better than that are using that as part of their pitch. But the only way that I can just be the best recruiter I can be, rather than being the quickest recruiter I can be, is by having that level of trust from you as a client to say, but I'm not, I'll give you 2 weeks to find the right shortlist and I won't go to your competition. You know, it's a two-way thing. equally, on your comment about sort of search and selection and C-suite, absolutely agree. At the more senior level, you'll have more loyalty. Might be in the negative side of me. I don't know if I'm putting too much, but on the flip side, lose one of those candidates and it means more to you.
Yeah.
It's all relative.
Yeah, totally. We've got a couple of questions in from Carla, who one is well, both are kind of technology related. One is, Carla wanted to know a bit more about Pager. Well, for a start, that's pager.co, I think. They're a distribution, social distribution channel, basically. So you can kind of schedule up your kind of social posts. And I think you're able to also post to your consultants' pages through LinkedIn. So you have kind of a centralized kind of brand control over what your kind of consultants are posting. And next one
from on Pager.
Yes, go.
Because what we mentioned before about sharing other people's content, you know, making use of the resources that are out there, Pager are a great tool for that, you know, because they're a big challenge for most of our customers. We pass most of them on to James to help them with this, but it is content creation.
Yeah. And the second kind of part of that question from Carla is, if we could recommend one piece of tech that is going to make a difference in a post-COVID client-led world, what would it be? Wow, one piece of tech. Go, Andy.
I was waiting for you to answer. I was just going to agree with you.
You can take this one first. I mean, to be honest, there's so much out there, and I don't think it necessarily. I suppose again, it's not necessarily always about the technology, but it's about what you're delivering and what you want the technology to do. So, from my perspective, is that moving forward, you know, you did the hard sell. You know, it is gone. It's got to be about, you know, educating your clients. It's got to be about attracting them and engaging them and delighting them. So anything that you can kind of, anything that you can put in place that delivers that. And so that could technically be something like this. You know, I mean, webinars are now kind of ubiquitous. Everybody's kind of got these webinars. So, you know, those are the kind of things that can keep people on board. We do it personally ourselves for our, you know, clients and potential clients. We run webinars for them, and that tends to kind of work really well. So I think it's more kind of content focused, and I know we've battered this over the head quite a bit today, as opposed to actually a single piece of tech. That said, and again, I'm not kind of I'm going to be slightly kind of agnostic here, that a good website is still something that everybody needs to kind of put money into, whether that is through Andy's business, whether it's through the other kind of specialized kind of recruitment tools out there. You know, a decent website that is connected up to the rest of your kind of tools in place and your back end, something that allows you to track people, clients, when they hit your website, you know, follow their life cycle, and use that data from a marketing perspective to serve them really good kind of content and get in front of them at the right time and give them the right kind of content. That's probably, if we're going to go down that route, then a decent website that's connected to the rest of your back end. And I can see Andy nodding. And I'm sure he's going to kind of probably agree.
Just that last point you mentioned there, you know, something that allows you to understand your users more and uses the data or collects the data. But the thing that you mentioned, using it to distribute the content, using the data, like big data and data collection and all of this sort of stuff, is people have been talking about it for years and years and years. However, what very few people do well is use that data, you know. So a tool that allows you to understand at a granular level what people like, dislike, where they like to see different pieces of content and that kind of stuff, but then actually allows you to make use of that data. You know, and it might be a case of a couple of different tools. Obviously, James mentioned us in terms of the website. It's important that your brand is housed somewhere that delivers a perfect experience and allows conversion. But a pager then would drive more traffic to a JXT, and a Think in Circles would encourage more engagement and more time spent on JXT because of the engaging content. So it's an amalgamation of all. And I just think it's important when recruiters are buying technology to consider the goal. How am I going to use it? What do I want to get out of this? And no technology is a smoking gun. You know, it's not just going to work straight away. Do you have the resource to put in to make it work?
Yeah, I completely agree. And on websites, I just wanted to kind of circle back to a point you made earlier about the kind of the client-focused areas on your website, because these, you know, in this new kind of client-led market, those kind of landing pages and those areas on your website are going to become hopefully more and more important. But it's something we haven't done very well previously. You know, up until a few years ago, what was your client page was just a let's know about your latest job form, submit, basically. Yeah. So what's the evolution of that now? Where do we know, what are you seeing? What are you suggesting for those kind of those core client pages on your website?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you still have your call to actions within them, but it is about, I guess, first from an attraction and visibility point of view, let's consider the content that we're using on those pages. Real high level example, but I can tell you now that me as a salesperson, I would search for sales jobs in Google, whereas me as a sales client looking for salespeople for my team, I would search for sales recruitment companies. Right. Two different search terms. So we need to start considering, like, a real high level example, but differencing messaging and difference in that content to build your organic SEO and your visibility. But yeah, you're right. Once on the page, lots of people think they're marketing to clients just by having a client page. A real great example of one of our clients that does it quite well is groupnp.com. People want to go onto that website afterwards and have a look. They've got a whole case studies section within their website, which allows them to actually demonstrate what they're doing for their clients. You know, it's got all of the services that they've offered and the solutions and the outcomes and how they approach the project and regional. It's really, really quite cool stuff. And they become testimonial pages that allow clients to, like I said before, clearly see what you're going to do for me as a business and where the returns could potentially be if I were to buy you as a business. But it also allows you to do cool things when you're pitching. You know, hey, Mr. Client, pay me an extra 5% and I'm going to brand a page on my website for you, and I'll take your employer value proposition, and I'll take your video, I'll become that extension to your recruitment team, you know, and all of a sudden it's quite a cool BD tool as well. There's people that are paying 15% that you need to get to 20, or 20% that you want exclusive. Let's offer them something else, because, you know, you do the same thing, you're going to get the same result.
Yeah, I completely agree. One of the things I always like to see on client pages is the meet the team and who's responsible for what within kind of who you'll be talking to. If you're a client, who you're going to be talking to. But that sometimes is buried under contact us or about us. But I think that's actually much more relevant from a in both kind of client and candidate sections. Because, again, typically on your recruitment website, you've got your home, about us, candidates, clients, jobs, boom. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But within that, I think that's all you need. I think that getting that order is really key. I always like to see kind of stuff that within kind of client sections that makes the client understand your business a lot. You know, that they feel comfortable. Again, back to this trust issue. So things around what you do. You know, what's your kind of your corporate social responsibility? Because these are kind of much more things that the clients are making decisions upon now. How do you treat your team? What are the benefits your team get? What is it like to work at that, you know, recruitment company X? I always think that kind of stuff can sit quite happily under client pages, because clients do their homework. You know, we know they do their homework. We know that these pages get hit a lot. So I think those are always kind of good things to kind of add into there as well.
Yeah, those meet the team, or sort of we call them personal profile pages. They are, I believe, I have to double check recent stats, but I believe the second most visited page on JXT recruitment websites, and second to the jobs pages. Because you're right, people want to know who they're dealing with. People want to know the experience of the specific consultant. We're referring back to Carla's question about one piece of tech. And we said there's not one sort of golden piece of tech, but when buying tech, buy from somebody that can help you with the utilization and the impact of that tech. So using the Meet the Team as an example, we would actually probably have it sitting on the sitemap underneath About Us. But our technology is built in such a way that one page might sit on the sitemap under About Us, but we can drop that widget into your client page, we'll also put that widget into the jobs so that I'm sitting on all the jobs that I work on and a variety of other pages. And it's just important that if you work with somebody that knows recruitment and has got a platform built by recruiters for recruiters, which is quite a common term in rec tech, then they'll be able to help you with all of that kind of stuff. But yeah, second most visited page on the website. From that page, I would have all of my live jobs sitting on my page. I would have relevant content to my page, specifically the division I work in and the roles that I work on, a bit about me, and obviously maybe my social profiles and things like that. And yeah, you're absolutely right. From the client page, people need to know about you as a business. It's not just about how good you are and how successful you've been, because people assume you're going to only put that stuff on your website. You know, it is all the other stuff. How you treat staff, how you treat your candidates will become more and more important. So maybe some information about how you've invested in technology or whatever it may be to better the candidate experience, not just win more candidates, be a better recruiter.
Also, a quick way of doing that is kind of linking up reviews and things like that as well these days. We bash on about those kinds of things. We'll come back to that. I'm going to make a note of reviews. But Pippa has asked, is there a better order for tabs, pages on a good website? Well, I mean, I suppose I'll kind of take a stab at this initially. The problem you've got is that there's now almost like a standard in recruitment websites, right? You know, if you are a candidate, you know, visiting numerous kind of recruiters' websites, then there's a standard which you kind of almost have to follow, because it just makes it easier for the candidate experience, basically. Now, I think in terms of exactly what we've just spoken about, there's you've got a bit of leeway and a bit of freedom when it comes to what sits under About Us, what sits under candidates, clients, and job search and news, which is probably the other one that kind of gets kind of dumped at the top. But I generally don't think there's any way necessarily to improve on that I can think of at the minute, because you don't want to break the kind of the cycle so much that it makes your website so kind of unusable almost.
I think that's so important. People, there is a reason why there is a sort of, like you mentioned there, James, a sort of a standard setup across recruitment sites, and JXT make a recommendation on an ideal sitemap. But it's very similar to what James described there, and there's a reason behind it, and it's because that's the best, and that's what works best for user experience. What I think then gets forgotten about, obviously the sitemap and the user experience and the journeys need to get mapped, but what is the goal of having an optimized website that's increasing traffic and increasing engagement? It's to take more applications or take more requirements or convert more. So let's not forget, the sitemap is important, the journeys are important, but on a mobile, can I convert them? You know, really, I'd rather 10 views, 10 applications than 100 views, one application.
Yeah, I mean, again, we haven't really kind of touched on mobile. And I mean, I don't know what the exact stats are these days, but it's something, I mean, it's over 50% now kind of visiting kind of recruitment sites on mobiles. So a mobile first almost kind of philosophy needs to be start it, really, because you need to kind of wonder how people are going to navigate a site with just their thumb and things like that, which people tend to forget about. You know, I mean, having a responsive website is fine, but when you get to a stage of it's kind of squished down onto your iPhone, other manufacturers of phones are available. but you know, I mean, I'm right-handed, so I scroll with my kind of right thumb, but you know, some people aren't. You know, some people might actually not kind of be able to use their kind of hands to navigate on certain sites. So it's a real kind of it becomes a bit of a minefield as well then, and you've got to try and kind of cover almost every eventuality. And again, coming back to kind of how does that affect the kind of your client experience or even your candidate experience? Well, anything that makes it easier to navigate your website is always kind of the best way forward. But making it easy doesn't mean it's actually easy to develop and implement.
Yeah. Making it easy, the same as the message that you're going to send to your clients. Help your clients, help your candidates with interesting content and helpful content and advice and guides. Help your candidates, help your clients through the buying process. You know, like, let's just look at Amazon. You know, their buying process, they will have a whole team invest millions and millions of pounds in researching the differences and running A/B tests on the differences. It's from a mobile perspective. I think you're not far off, you know, sort of high 50s in terms of mobile uses on recruitment websites. From a JXT perspective, about 75 and 80% of applications that go through JXT websites, which there's thousands and thousands every month, as you would imagine, about 75 to 80% use a social apply button. So 25% of people are uploading CVs. Everyone else is using our opportunity to use their Indeed profile or their LinkedIn profile or Zing in Germany or Monster and things like this. And again, that's JXT making it easier for your candidates to apply for jobs with you. But like James mentioned there, it doesn't mean it was necessarily easy for us to develop that technology.
I want to just kind of finish up on something that I kind of picked up on was regard to reviews, and the kind of how useful they are now and how almost kind of critical they are. Things like Glassdoor has become just, you know, everybody kind of is always kind of going about worrying about their Glassdoor reviews, and almost kind of on a daily basis I have those kind of discussions. But it's not the only kind of obviously review site out there. What does that play in a kind of in with kind of client attraction and client kind of engagement?
It's huge, right? People are. I mean, I think I had some stats last year, but it's common sense. People will believe what your customers tell them more than they believe what you tell them. So it is absolutely vital that you are able to do that. I'm still a bit dubious, and again, maybe a bit negative, but you people who leave reviews by their own account, they're typically negative reviews. People that leave good reviews have typically been asked to do so. That being said, it doesn't mean that there's no value to them. I could ask 100 people, but only one says yes, right? So it's about what you do with that information. It builds to trust. People believe what your customers say, not what you say. It's simple, really.
I agree. It's a tricky one with reviews. And I'm of the opinion that I wouldn't worry too much about the kind of if you're going to get negative ones. I think as long as you kind of handle it in a very transparent and open way, and everyone else who's looking at that can see that you have answered, you have responded in a really kind of transparent way and answered it in front of everybody, basically. I think that works for me. I know businesses that some we work with who are so kind of almost kind of so scared of, you know, doing anything online because they're going to get bad reviews or bad comments. And it's like, well, if you're big enough and ugly enough to get them, then you're doing something right, probably. And there's a standard way to respond to it. You know what I mean? Is you just kind of be open and transparent. And sometimes it's someone with a real grudge, but sometimes it's actually someone you can actually probably kind of turn into an advocate.
Do you know what? And actually, that's a really valid point, because most people's biggest advocates at some point probably weren't an advocate of theirs. Yes. And actually, I completely agree with you, because I think most customers would appreciate that it's very rare that nothing goes wrong. You know, from a technology point of view, things can happen within implementation or with the technology or whatever. From a content delivery point of view, you know, things happen that are unexpected. And I do think people are reasonable enough to know that. What really adds to value is being able to see how you reacted, you know, and you're entirely right. You know, if someone can see that, then that's got huge value.
So we've got another question from Carla and one from Pippa, and they're both basically the same one around kind of the difference and which is better between kind of Glassdoor versus Trustpilot versus Google versus Hunted versus whatever else is out there. It's an interesting one. The thing is, you can't cover them all, and otherwise you'll just kind of go nuts and spend your day just trying to kind of cover every single review site. So my advice is usually try and guide people to the ones that you want to use and you're going to kind of advertise it use. Google is pretty easy to kind of to get reviews from, and also kind of it has a kind of direct association with your business page and things like that on Google. And then within kind of the recruitment business world, you can't kind of get away from Glassdoor. You've kind of got to monitor it. But what's your feeling? Does JXT kind of offer those kind of little kind of pop-ups along the side to kind of review our services or leave us a review?
Yeah, absolutely. We would have a widget I think we believe we actually integrate with the likes of Glassdoor and HubSpot. If not, then it's a link out. All of the tools are, you can't be across all of them. They are all good in parts and bad in others. I'm with you. I think Google's quite a good one. Glassdoor is the most recruitment one, I would say, and the most known. What I would say is it doesn't really matter what the tool is. Let's try and drive the traffic to review you via your website where you're controlling your brand. And then if you're working with a provider, JXT or another, we can house those reviews within your website so people can still see them. And then we'll give them the option to leave reviews, etc. But you're kind of protecting yourself and protecting what content and what journey the customer or the candidate goes on.
I suppose the one thing you could try and do, and you've considered this but never actually kind of implemented it, is try and focus your candidates down one route and your clients down another. So you kind of separate the two out. You know, so you've kind of got a differentiation, right? These are our kind of candidate reviews over here. These are our client reviews. Otherwise, it can get quite muddy. And I think this might be something that, you know, would become more and more of a thing in the future, is to say, right, well, all of our client reviews are on Google and all of our other reviews are here, or something like that. I think that might be kind of an aim in the kind of future.
Yeah, I agree. Personalizing the message, there would be no reason why you can't have clients in one place and candidates in another, as long as it doesn't impact the user experience, as long as it doesn't look rubbish from a user interface point of view, you know.
What we like to do, and again, this is a good thing that it's quite easy to implement, is just try and elicit reviews at certain points along the kind of the process, whether it's a candidate or a client. You can definitely kind of push them at certain points, i.e. after signing the contract, after kind of first interview, and try and kind of pick up on the kind of problems in the process and the customer service process at that point. But I could talk about that for ages. Andy, we have come to the end of Working Lunch for today. It's been a pleasure having you on board. Thank you for your insight. Thanks everybody for watching. We had some great questions today, so thank you all for those. Thank you, Carla and Pippa, for kind of the majority of those questions. I am back tomorrow co-hosting with Shafiq Mamani, as we talk to Mr. LinkedIn himself. And then you've got Stephen back on Friday for his roundup of the week. So thank you for joining us today. Thank you, Andy. Hopefully we can kind of have you back and we can carry on the talk about kind of review sites and a little bit more about kind of web technology maybe in the future.
Perfect. Thanks for having me on. It's been fun.
Cheers. Thank you, everybody.
Good night.
You've been listening to the Marketing Rules Podcast from Thinking Circles. Available on all major podcasting platforms, including Apple and Spotify. Just search the Marketing Rules Podcast or visit www.themarketingrules.com. To work with James or Thinking Circles, visit www.thinkingcircles.com.
The Marketing Rules Podcast is a Thinking Circles production.